Hello, I'm Fred Stella, president of the Interfaith Dialogue Association. Welcome to another edition of Common Threads. If you have listened to Common Threads over the years, you know that one gentleman who has been on here several times is Len Robinson. Len is a member of the Jewish community. Currently, he is president of the board of directors at Temple Emmanuel here in Grand Rapids.
Three more months? Yes.
Counting down, I can tell. And Len has been here, as I said, several times. And the reason he's here today is he just got back from Israel. And I've been very excited to talk to him about it. And I thought, why not kill two birds with one stone? Why not have a conversation with Len, as I would anyway, but why not put it on the radio? It's easy. So, Len Robinson, welcome to Common Threads.
Thank you very much. But, you know, when we always talk, we always have Indian food in front of us, and we're eating.
We do. This is...
This glass of water.
I know. And it's not Indian water.
Yeah.
Which means we can drink it.
Yeah.
But, so, Len... First of all, I did not realize you were in Israel until I started seeing pictures on Facebook.
Yeah.
Because we hadn't had a conversation in a while.
Right.
Was there any particular reason you were in Israel?
Rabbi Lewis, what happened was we had been talking about how do we get people going over there. And sometimes it's there's really two things, the fear and the expense. Or the fear of the expense. And he found something on Groupon that I was able to do. It was an 8-day tour. Round trip airlines between Tel Aviv and New York and Tel Aviv and back for $1,400. So,
Wait a minute. This was just the flight or this was?
This was everything. The hotel,
really?
Everything. I think the Ministry of Tourism probably subsidized it some. And it's like, it had been 37 years since I had been to the last trip to Israel. And partly it was like, well, for the kind of money, let me go visit this place or that place. I've already seen enough of it. But then it was more of exploratory to see what kind of stuff, you know, it'd be 3-star hotels instead of the Intercontinental. But so it was more Rabbi Lewis trying to say, bring back a report on if this is something so that people who kind of, because it's through, I'm not going to advertise, but it's through a company that has more reduced fares because you can go at the non-heavy season time. We didn't get there during our Holy Week or anything like that. It was right after the rainy season. So it actually was kind of nice because it was springtime and not so hot.
Oh, because it can get hot over there, can't it?
Yes, it can.
So when you say, like, Holy Week, you were actually high season would be both Christian Holy Week?
Yes.
But wouldn't it also be?
The Jewish holidays, too. And we were in between any of the holidays yet of either one of them. So it's a really good time because you have to stand in line. You have to do all that other sort of thing.
That's fantastic. Boy, yeah. $1,400 for hotels, and that's 8 days.
Yes.
That's pretty remarkable.
That was remarkable.
And you were telling me before that it had been 37 years since your last trip. Is that
I
right?
Know. I was 1 year old. 37, yes, 37 years. So partly I went only to see more of to see what has happened with the country. I didn't really want to look at the political. I've heard all the different sides of the political. But more of just what is it like in that 37 years Israel's taken in the Soviets. They've taken in Ethiopians. You know, in the war in Bosnia, they basically brought the Bosnians over there. And the Iraqis and, you know, what's left of the Syrians.
Those people in those countries who are Jewish.
Exactly.
Yes.
You know, although they've also brought in other people, but mainly Jewish. And to then see this, what happens to a country that when I was there before was 4 million, that is now 8 million people in a small little country. And it was interesting to see the changes.
Does it seem like it's crowded?
The cities are crowding, not like Hong Kong or Calcutta or whatever.
Sure.
Because you've got a lot of open countryside for the agricultural. but Tel Aviv, I would have said 37 years ago would have been very much like South Beach, you know, the international architecture of 2 and 3 stories with the balconies and things like that. But everything's gone up, so you almost see a small Manhattan kind of thing. Not that high of skyscrapers, but still, you know, it's gone up because that's all that can be afforded where the land is very precious.
Do you get the sense, do you feel either protected or perhaps even overprotected by a military or police presence?
Yes and no. I think so. I am sure many of the police presence is undercover because you don't see huge amounts of soldiers, but you do see soldiers. And, you know, suddenly I'm on the tram and the person next to me is a soldier with a, I have no idea what guns are, so whatever kind of gun they're holding. It used to be 37 years ago, you had to go through security and be patted down a little bit more, and I didn't, but I think there was a lot of security. I have the feeling that, you know, they knew who I was when I came into the country kind of
sure.
of thing that's already, you know, checks had done. You know, I did not go to Bethlehem. There was a tour that went to Bethlehem, but you know, I've seen Bethlehem. I've been around there a lot, and I had a feeling it wasn't going to change that much in 37 years that I needed to see. But the people that went over to Bethlehem said yeah, there was a lot of checkpoints and other things that they had to go through. I didn't have to as much, but I tried to talk to both sides, and I really don't want to get into the politics of it because my belief system is sometimes Americans stick their nose in and try to take sides where they should probably look to see what's going on in their own house. But I tried to just sit and listen, and I listened to some of the Palestinians and the pressure they were going through. I listened to the Israelis and the pressure they were going through.
Wait, when you say you listened, do you mean you, when
actually,
you were there?
I actually didn't open my mouth and I listened.
But you had conversation with people while you were there.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's wonderful.
You know me.
Of course.
Because I tried to get away from a group whenever possible. If they were going to a place I'd already seen, if I didn't think it was going to change that much, I just took off and sat and drank wonderful Turkish coffee. Or, of course, you probably experienced it in India. When we say freshly squeezed lemonade, it's different than our freshly squeezed lemonade.
Oh, absolutely.
Because it's taken off the tree.
Yes.
A few hours before, not taken off, you know, when it's green and shipped to us, and then we make it fresh.
Exactly.
So, yes, it was wonderful lemonade, you know, with mint and everything like that. Or I would sit there and wander through, whether it's the Armenian quarter, the Arab quarter of the old city, and just sit there and find people to talk to and try to shut up and listen. Because I would rather... Because I don't know the answers. I don't know those problems. Those people, it's higher than my intelligence level. But to listen to what people are going through.
And were people open with you, do you think?
Surprisingly, I thought that they wouldn't be. But they, you know, they brought out on both sides their own sense of frustration and what they've gone through. And in fact, I found that more in Jerusalem. I was really surprised because where I like to sit near the gate in Jaffa is where the person was stabbed. And I didn't find as much stress and pressure right in that area. But, you know, people worry about being stabbed. I could look at the paper in Grand Rapids.
Sure.
You know, is that you end up going, do I want to live my life in my house and have an elephant fall from from the sky and hit me, or do I go and explore and try to shut up and listen?
Sure, sure. When you approach people, do you assume that they speak English?
I'm really becoming a good American, aren't I? Because I'm sitting there one time, and there's a Palestinian taxi cab driver, and he's taking me to the wrong place, and I know, and it's not anything purposely, you know. Mm-hmm. And I'm thinking, I hope he spoke Hebrew, and my Hebrew was really terrible, and it came out in Spanish.
Did you get to where you were going?
I finally told him to stop it. I got out and paid him and said, I'm close to the tram. I'll go to the tram.
Oh,
okay. Because I thought, I have no idea. If he's not understanding my English, I had better just cut it off. But there's a wonderful tram that you can go on to. So
okay, I was actually, one of my questions was going to be, how's your conversational Hebrew when you've just
it's
said
terrible.
Great? Is it
Mashlomek, Shlomitov, Mashlomishpacha? And suddenly, isn't it funny? Hey, you've done this all along, and then you're having to talk to somebody, and that's the first lesson of how are you? I am fine. How is your family?
but clearly enough people. You ran into enough people.
Enough
spoke
people.
English.
Yeah, most Israelis speak English, and most of the Palestinians that I knew that I ran into, because an awful lot of them were, workers in some of the hotels and things like that, that like were off work and I just happened to be talking to them or whatever. Yeah.
Right. As a tourist, mm-hmm. just somebody who went like you, and let's say I went with you, would you be afforded any amenities or courtesies or privileges that would not be open to me as someone who is not Jewish?
I don't think so, because I don't think they would know one way or the other. First of all, do you know, in America, there's this, oh, you look Jewish, which is kind of hard to tell.
Sure.
You know, whatever. But in Israel, you've got Jews from Ethiopia and Niger that are black. You know, you have Jews that are from Kurdistan and Persia, and there's Jews in India, and there's different kinds. There's the ones that were really there for a long time that are darker, mm-hmm. and then you have the Persian Jews that came in later, and then you have some of the more European Jews that came in later. So it's like, how do you know? In many cases, sometimes you can tell the Palestinian, because there's a darker hue, but not completely, you know.
Sure. But so, for instance, entrance into any particular synagogues, I would be able to go in.
Oh, yeah.
What about the Wailing Wall?
Oh, just fine. Yeah. And I was on a tour that wasn't Jewish. It was a secular tour.
Oh, I see.
So you had everything.
But you went to the wall. You had a picture mm-hmm. of yourself.
Right.
Were women there at the time?
There's that big, huge thing, is that there's the separation of the men and the women, but there is a place now that they've working out that men and women can pray together, and it's a big, hot issue.
I've read.
Yeah.
But it is possible. If a woman goes to Jerusalem today, she can approach the wall in a particular place. Is that what you're saying?
There's a women's place.
That's what I'm saying.
I'm just not a big enough expert to find out, because we're only in the process right now of one where the men and the women can pray together.
I see.
And when you go into the synagogues, most of them are Orthodox. I think that's... No, I'm trying to get to be political. I was going to say, unfortunately, I think...
Go on.
Some of the rules are still very much controlled by the Orthodoxy as far as it coming to being Jewish, you know, where as a Hindu or Christian, there's strong Baha'i community in Haifa. Mm-hmm. It's run by who their religious leaders are.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Common Threads on WGVU-FM. I'm Fred Stella, and with me today is Len Robinson. He is president of the board of Temple Emmanuel here in Grand Rapids, Michigan, and we're talking about his recent trip to Israel. Let me ask you this. Is the word pilgrimage ever ascribed to the kind of journey that you took? Is that a Jewish term?
I've not heard it talked about. I know the word mission sometimes is talked about, because traditionally, there would be a lot of American Jews that would come and start helping out some of the people that had just been the new immigrants. And so you sometimes would go on a mission to kind of help out fellow people that were in need of help. Not so much a mission to evangelize.
Right, of course.
But a mission basically to help some of the newer immigrants. But pilgrimage, I've not heard so much. I suppose in the sense of, in the mysticism, there's a couple of, I went to Shvat, which is the center, tended to be the center of Kabbalistic Judaism.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there's a few times that in the past, not so much in the modern times, they would think about taking a pilgrimage maybe 100 years ago, 150 to Shvat to learn under some of the great masters there.
But even the Wailing Wall itself, that is not considered something that... I mean, I know it's not required the same way a trip to Mecca is for a Muslim, but you don't really use that word.
I don't think so, not in modern times. We had the pilgrimage festivals clear back when the temple was around it, that you should have gone to the temple during one of those pilgrimage festivals. But I've, in my number of years I've lived, it's not something I've used a lot or I've heard used a lot.
Sure, sure. Because I know that some traditions have that.
Yeah.
And even within traditions, for instance, in Christianity, many Protestants stay away from the word pilgrimage.
It is something that I would recommend to every Jew to go to the Western Wall, and I would recommend it to you. And here's where maybe the mystical part of me comes out.
Okay.
You know, it is the wall, or the retaining wall that was left standing of the old temple. Why I think it, you know, does it have power because it was right above where the Holy of Holies was? I'm not going to say yes or no, but I would also say it has power that for 2,000 years, people have poured out their soul and their heart and left some energy there, because people who aren't Jewish have gone and been affected by just standing there. So I think there are holy places. I would probably feel that same way if I went to Mecca. If I went to some other holy places where people have poured their soul out to God, I think there's an energy there.
Sure. I was in a small town in Turkey a few years ago at the home that is purportedly the house that Mary lived with the disciple John.
Okay.
And immediately when I walked in,
yes,
I burst into tears.
That's what happened to me in the Western Wall this time.
Yeah.
I didn't even realize it, except they started dripping. Yeah. And you've been around me. I'm not a crier.
That's true. That's true. And outside of so-called Mary's house,
right,
it's not proved or anything,
right,
but there's the tradition is this is where she was when she died. Mm. There is a wall where people have pinned prayers.
Mm.
And it's very powerful to look at this wall with just thousands of little pieces of paper.
That's what you do with the Western Wall.
Exactly.
You put a prayer there.
Yeah.
And supposedly God will answer that. But I haven't won the lotto yet. But I shouldn't make a joke other than the fact that's how I do things. But no, there's some things that we find places. And maybe they were holy to begin with, and that's why we made them holy places. Or maybe we made them holy places, but it's a holy place.
I can understand.
And I've seen Christians and Jews and people who I have no idea what they were, you know, break down in tears or feel something.
Now, you say that you went on a secular tour.
Mm-hmm.
So you were with people who were Jewish, not Jewish?
Right. Just a whole combination. I would say, I'd say maybe a third were Christian, a third were Jewish, a third were called themselves Messianic Jews, which I would call Christian. But it was a whole mixture of people, different, mostly American. There was, totally American. There was a lady from Puerto Rico, which of course is America. But really, every kind of, in fact, if we didn't argue religion, we argued politics.
I was going to ask, the fact you had Jews and you had Messianic Jews.
Yeah.
There, I'm guessing there were from some colorful conversations. Am I correct?
Or? I think we kind of kept it to, do you know, I didn't want to, again, I wanted to shut my mouth up and listen, because, you know, I consider it Christianity, you know, but at the same time, I also listened to their stories of how they came to feel like they did. Mm-hmm. So this really was meant to be, quote, a pilgrimage of just observing and not making judgments on anything. Because I said, you know, I don't want to come back after 8 days and have solved the Palestinian-Israeli conflict. You know, I don't want to solve all the problems, which I think is more of a political contract, but I also don't want to get involved in religious things. You know, I chose not to go to the Church of the Holy Sepulchre just because I'd been walking around for so long and I knew there were steps and I'd been there. But I experienced the Church of Mary's Ascension, I think it was.
Okay.
And I didn't even know she had ascended, or the
Assumption. The word is assumption.
Assumption. Okay. Yeah. Shows how much I know about that, doesn't it? I have to have a Hindu guy teach me that.
Yeah. 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 And there's a theological difference, but never mind.
Oh, okay.
For a different show. Now, you are a part of a Reform congregation. Mm-hmm. At the same time, you also have a relationship with a Hasidic congregation here in Grand Rapids. Mm-hmm. What is it like being a Reform Jew in Israel? Do they let you do that?
Yes, there's still some conflict, do you know, because the religious authorities basically are saying that's not the right form of Judaism.
Yes.
You know, so
they will not tell you you're not Jewish,
right?
But they will tell you that the form that you're practicing isn't correct Judaism.
Right. You know.
Yeah.
But it's something I didn't get involved in. It's not something that, I guess when you get as old as I am, you have to look to say, what battles do you fight? And I
sure.
can appreciate other people's battles, but there's a lot of things that are happening in our Jewish community here that I can do. Other people are very, very more on the different sides. That's their choice. You know, the Talmud says that it's not your mission to heal the incomplete world, but it's your mission to look at your corner of the world and help heal that.
Right. You taught me a phrase years ago. Not my tikkun.
Exactly. Yeah, it's not my healing. There are many cases, an example, which is off the subject, but I just read where Grand Rapids has one of the most hardest for African-American people to rise.
On the rungs, yeah.
That is my tikkun. I live here. And I sitting there saying, oh, you know, I need to start listening to some people because I cannot come as Mr. White Guy saying, I'm going to come and solve your problem. But maybe I need to listen and then find out how do we start the healing in Grand Rapids. That's my tikkun.
Sure, sure. But are there Reform congregations in Israel?
In Israel? Yes, there are.
Okay. Mm-hmm. But it is tremendous. It's interesting, and it's kind of hard for me to wrap my head around. This might be true for other mm-hmm. people. The ultra-Orthodox rabbis in Israel carry a lot of weight.
Mm-hmm.
At the same time, it's a hugely secular society.
Mm-hmm.
How does that work?
Why don't you ask why that's happening in America?
Well, because in America, it's true that we do have people who are very connected to religion.
Yes.
And have influence, but at the same time, they don't have like an official title of being a rabbi. Are the rabbis actually a part of the government?
I think even more so right now because of of coalitions. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a basically a 50-50 split in many different parties. It's not a two-party system. So in order to build a government, you have to, and for the first decades was the Labor government. But then when we had much more conservative people coming in, you know, there were a lot, basically the Arab countries, the Jews were basically left all the Arab countries, went to France, which we hear about some of the issues going on there, and to the Israel, which is much more of a conservative community. You had an awful lot of Soviets that had come over that maybe were secular but are much more conservative, that suddenly brought the coalition to being much more 50-50 coalition.
Okay.
And in order to get a coalition, you give
make
and
deals.
Take and everything else. And I think when you were secular, when it was so secular before all the changes, you know, if you were that secular, it didn't really matter what some rabbi, and there are Haredi, not called, rather than ultra-Orthodox, that what some Haredi, because so many of the secular ones didn't know the Shema, didn't know anything like that. It wasn't important to them.
Sure. I have to stop you right there, Len, because we're out of time for this session. But this is fascinating conversation. I'd love to have you back next week, and we'll continue this.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Common Threads here on WGVU. I'm Fred Stella. My guest today has been Len Robinson of Temple Emmanuel here in Grand Rapids, Michigan. And please join us next week when we continue this chat here on Common Threads.